Women of Strength, have you listened to episode 406 yet? Co-founder Julie from Needed and I dove deeper into the reasons for nutritional depletion, which is common in 95% of women, and what to look for in a prenatal vitamin. We were also able to chat about something super cool that Needed has to offer, and that's the Needed Academy. It is a place where people can find free nutritional education taught by leading women's perinatal health experts from OBGYNs, midwives, doulas, and nutritionists. I highly recommend checking it out. To learn more, visit neededacademy.com or check out the show notes for the link. Want one less decision to make in postpartum? Coterie is like the autopilot button for diapers. They're hypoallergenic, ultra-absorbent, and made without any of the junk. We love Coterie because clean ingredients on your baby's most sensitive parts is super important. Best part? You can text them when you need to size up or delay your next box. Postpartum is wild. Coterie just makes it feel a little lighter. You can use our exclusive code VBAC20, that is VBAC20, at checkout to make postpartum a little easier with an extra 20% off your order. Welcome to the Feedback Link, everybody. We have our friend Hannah from Arizona with us today. Hello, Hannah.
Hi. Thank you for having me on. This has honestly been such a helpful podcast for me, so I'm excited to be a part of it.
Wow. I'm excited that you're here. And, you know, we've talked about this before. It usually goes full circle. Like, you listen to all these stories all the time, every day or every week, and then now here you are sharing your two VBAC stories with us today. And so, yeah, just a little bit more about Hannah. She is a mom of three littles under four. Three babies under 4 years old. Power to you, mama. You are amazing. Balancing life as a full-time wife, mom, and a full-time work in a nonprofit company. That's awesome. What's your nonprofit?
Yeah, so I work for Susan G. Komen, currently breast cancer research.
Awesome. And
love the work.
Love that. Love that. Love that. And then in addition to all the momming, wifing, and working, she loves outdoors and spending evenings at parks with her kids and just being together. So I am so happy that you are here today. And I'm really excited to talk more a little bit about induction and labor dystocia. Labor dystocia is where it kind of stalls, right? It just comes to a halt. And then, not to do too much spoiler, but to give them a little bit of information about some of the future births for your VBAC. Was it your second VBAC you said that was shoulder dystocia?
Yep, my second VBAC had shoulder dystocia.
Second VBAC. So she had shoulder dystocia. So I know that's something that a lot of people look for, whether that they had dystocia before. So I'm excited for you to talk a little bit more about the process of that. But let's talk a little bit about induction and labor dystocia. Before we started recording, you guys, she was talking about how every single one of her pregnancies, she's been told like, hey, let's induce. And I was kind of telling her that that's what we're seeing here in Utah. And honestly, in talking to hundreds of people on our social media and our inbox, we're seeing that induction is just being pushed so hard. The question of why, I don't know exactly, other than control. I don't really know. We can control who's coming in and out, but talk to us a little bit more about the pressure that you received for induction. And I know you're going to get into the story, but with your first, that was an induction, correct?
Yes, my first was an induction, and that one was completely just because my due date was December 11th, and so we're coming up to the holidays, turned 40 weeks, and happened to be in his office on my 40th week with no real signs of labor starting. And so he said, why don't we go ahead and do so you can meet your baby before the holidays? And also, baby gets bigger in the last week. And so we're only going to grow in size. It's a great time to have that induction.
Baby. Man, that has a lot of things packed with that. Convenience. Don't you just want to have a baby before the holidays? And then also some fear of, you know, that baby gets bigger this next week, so let's do it now before your baby gets too big. And wow, we're going to dive into that story. I wanted to talk a little bit more about induction. A lot of people don't know when it comes to VBAC in general, induction actually still can happen. There are a lot of providers out there that say no to it, even though the evidence shows that it's possible. But there's been this recent buzz, at least back in 2024, there's been a little buzz about taking Tums to help avoid things like more Pitocin and stall of labor or labor dystocia. The crazy part is there's really not a ton of like concrete solid evidence, but I did kind of want to talk about it a little bit today. There's two ingredients and in it to the antacid, and it's calcium and carbonate. And they're trying to see, and they are somewhat showing that there is a positive impact on labor outcomes when taking it independently. So taking calcium during labor has been associated with shorter labor times, and the idea of taking calcium can lead to more efficient contractions during labor. Additionally, with the bicarbonate, labor has been shown to reduce the amniotic fluid and turn increasing spontaneous vaginal deliveries. So there's some things in there. There's some pros and there's some cons in there. And really, the recent studies that have been, again, not hardcore. Like, I do not say go run and like down the Toms. That's not what I'm saying. But it's just like something that, might need to be a conversation here as they're diving deeper and trying to get this studied. And we might end up into a situation like Hannah maybe did, where failure to progress, yes, I'm doing air quotes, comes up and, maybe it can help. So maybe chat with your provider about it, see kind of what they're saying, and then check out the show notes, or in the show notes, there's a link to our blog. And again, like I said, there's very little studies on it, like very, very little studies. But the recent literature review on the topic, researchers are saying calcium carbonate is a simple, low-cost treatment that could yield a potential means of increasing spontaneous vaginal birth and possibly preventing labor dystocia and also preventing cesareans. So it's a very interesting topic to check out. Again, just gonna say it one more time. Not concrete evidence here. I'm just sharing what we've got so far, but maybe something to talk to your providers about. All right, we're going to get into the intro and then turn the time over to Hannah. Hi, my name is Megan. Welcome to the VBAC Link podcast. I am a VBAC after two C-section mama, a wife, doula, and VBAC educator. This podcast was created to hold space for those wanting to know their options for birth after cesarean. It is a space where you will likely find yourself getting better educated, relate to stories like your own, and finding the inspiration to help you have a better birth experience. Although we will be sharing stories related to cesarean and VBAC, this podcast is for anyone and everyone who wants to receive evidence-based information and learn how to avoid unnecessary or undesired cesareans. The purpose of this podcast is to educate and inform. It is not meant to replace advice from any other medical professional. Okay, Miss Hannah, I've taken up so much of your time already talking about Tums, but isn't it a fascinating thing?
It is.
It is.
Yes. I wish I had known more about those things when I was going through it.
I know, me too, because I was also a failure to progress. And honestly, like Tums doesn't, I don't know. We're learning, right? What could negatively impact it, but I'm like, what could really negative impact my labor or my baby in that time? Maybe worth a try. I don't know. I don't know. Oh, okay, so let's talk about. So you were induced. Let's dive into baby number one.
All right. So with my first, we found out I was pregnant with her in April of 2020. So right at the start of the pandemic when everything was shutting down. And we were very excited, obviously, but it meant that my husband was not able to join in any of the appointments, any of the ultrasounds, wasn't really able to be a part of it. Unfortunately, I had a pretty uncomplicated pregnancy. I think hindsight's 2020. There's probably some things that are missed now that I know how my future pregnancies have gone. But overall, every time I went in, they were very quick and short appointments, socially distanced, masked appointments. And I was just told everything kept looking great. And so we just kept going along. And I got to the end of my 40 weeks, and my OB said, "Okay, you're at 40 weeks. The baby's only getting bigger and you're pretty small. So let's go ahead and induce you and you can have this baby before the holidays. So it's not too close. And as a first time mom, I totally agreed.
Well,
I said, that sounds great.
it sounds lovely.
Yep.
And it also is, like I said earlier, it kind of sounds scary. So you're like,
Yep.
sounds like a perfect thing. Let's do this.
Yep. And I could mentally get ready for it. I knew when the baby was
Yep.
coming
Yep.
and just felt like I could mentally, quotes, get ready that I was going in that day to have a baby. And
Yeah.
so it sounded great. And I was uncomfortable as a first-time mom. So it
Yeah.
was, I went away with it. So showed up at 40 and 2 days on the evening of my 42nd day for induction at the hospital. And I think I don't really remember, but I believe I took some oral something oral to help start with the induction,
Probably
possibly.
Cytotect.
I
So they
think
do
so.
Cytotect both oral and vaginally.
Okay.
So maybe some
I did
Cytotect.
oral. Yeah, that sounds right. And so I did that. And then by like 10 p.m., they had me already hooked up to Pitocin. I never had done my homework on even types of inductions or what to start with or what things to even look for. I was totally going off of whatever I was being told to do. And so I started having contractions and, feeling the Pitocin kick in. So I labored all night that way. And I remember at one point, it was like halfway through the night, I had asked if I'm able to get up and walk around a little bit because nothing was really happening and contractions were pretty light and manageable. So I was just curious if I could move around. And the nurse had said, no, why would you want to do that? You need to get your rest now while you can. And so again, I was so agreeable and just laid in bed. Then about 7 a.m., the OB comes in. And he's doing his morning rounds and everything was looking great. I got checked. I was at a 3 centimeters. So he's like, why don't we just break your water and you'll have this baby by lunchtime? So again, first time mom.
Right.
Did not know.
I get it. I've been there too.
Yep.
Listen, we don't know what we don't know, and we take what we're given as the best advice that we have in the
Yep.
moment.
I believed that he had my best interest at heart, and I think he
I
still
think he
did,
did.
but
Yeah.
he just, had wanted safe baby, safe delivery, and was focused on just having that baby.
Fast.
Yep,
Fast.
fast before hit the end of his day. So, yeah, so we went ahead and we broke my water, and everything was looking great. And he said he'd be back around lunchtime and probably to deliver this baby. Fast forward just like a couple hours, and I had all of a sudden, all the alarms going off in the room, and the heart rate started decelerating on the baby. So they didn't really tell me what was going on at first. They just rushed into the room and start moving me around until they were able to get that heart rate balanced again. And it only took a couple minutes. It wasn't a big deal. I didn't really think much of it. They just kind of chalked it up to she didn't like that contraction and left the room. And then once again, it happened a little bit later on. And this time, like it was more aggressive. It took a little bit longer to get her stabilized. And I had to wear oxygen mask, all the things. So they said, we're going to call your OB and have him come in because she doesn't seem to be liking this labor. And so again, I just didn't even know what it meant to have those things happen or what a heart decel really was or how it can impact the labor portion of it. So I just kind of waited all day, just in bed. And I had gotten an epidural around 10 a.m. And again, I was only 4 centimeters along at that time. I hadn't really wanted an epidural yet, but they had told me the anesthesiologist would be going to surgery. So if I wanted one,
Oh,
now is
yes,
the
this
time to grab it.
happens. Oh, man. Yeah, they do that scarcity thing, real. It well, just in case,
Yep, he's passing now. You should,
So did
have
baby's
him.
heart rate start dropping after epidural?
After epidurals.
Okay, yeah, which can happen.
Yep.
Yes.
And so all day I'd just kind of been rotating back and forth on the peanut ball side to side. And that was just kind of how I labored in bed all day long once I got the epidural. And yeah, I didn't, again, just didn't think much of it. And then they kept telling me that the OB was going to come check on me so, shortly. And he arrived around 6 or 7 p.m. that evening for, yeah.
What? So he didn't even stop in by lunchtime?
Nope, he didn't even stop in by
Oh,
lunchtime. I was only
goodness.
4 centimeters dilated. And so Yeah, he came in around 6 or 7 and kind of looked at me and did another check. And he's like, "You're still at 4 centimeters. Your water's been broken for 12 hours. It's only risk for infection." And at this point, I think we're going to have to talk about a C-section, which I knew in the back of my mind, I really didn't want a C-section, but I also felt like I didn't have another way. Like whatever was recommended was what I would have to go along with. And so I didn't know how to self-advocate at that point or just have any talking points or anything, education-wise. So, he gave me and my husband some time to talk about it for a couple minutes in the room, and we just decided that's probably the safest thing so that we don't run risk of infection and so that we can, have this baby safely. And he came back in and he was like, "You're gonna love it. She'll be here in your arms in 30 minutes, and we'll get you all stitched up and you'll be on your way and you'll have great holidays with your new baby." And so everything from the C-section actually went well. It was uncomplicated. It was fairly peaceful. It was our choice, if you will. So it felt fine. And it wasn't until I was rolled back to the recovery room and they were like, "Okay, it's time to get up and walk." That's when everything for me just started kind of spiraling a little bit in the sense that I sat up and I just started dry heaving and felt so sick. I hadn't eaten in over 30 hours because I wasn't able to have any food. I had asked at one point, like, "Can I have some, like, just a small bite of a protein bar?" And they said no.
Yes.
And when they were prepping me for the C-section, the nurse had come in and brought me just like a little popsicle. And I remember getting that like taste of popsicle and immediately feeling like I can keep going. I can do this. But before that, I thought, man, even if I got to get to push, I have nothing left in my tank. Like I can't get this baby here any other way. Then sugar hit my bloodstream. And I thought, oh, I could go a little bit longer, but it was already too late. I was already getting prepped. So yeah, I got back and I started trying to walk around and I was dry heaving and couldn't get up to walk. And it was at that point I just asked, like, was this absolutely necessary? Was this the only way? And so that's when my mind started going into like, will it always be like this for me? Is this my future? And will I have more? So that's when BBAC really became even in my vocabulary at that point. And then looking back, I ended up swelling a lot after my C-section. I had about 40 pounds of water weight that I carried for over 6 weeks.
Did
And
you have post eclampsia or whatever, postpartum
so,
eclampsia?
no, not officially diagnosed, but hindsight 2020, I think there's a lot of things missed that then in future pregnancies showed up that I
Impacted
can
you.
look back and go, I think I did have something. It just wasn't, my OB was very hands off. So,
But
yep.
that's a lot. That's a lot.
Yeah.
So
So it was a
definitely a
tough recovery.
recovery.
It was a very tough recovery. And I went home and I tried to like lay in bed the first few nights and just cried. I couldn't get in or out of bed because with my bed being too soft and having so much water weight, I couldn't lift my legs. They were so heavy. And by like the third night, I was like really upset by 5 p.m. at the thought of having to get in bed. And finally, someone said, "Why don't you get a recliner so that you can sleep in and get yourself in and out?" And that was such a game changer. And it was something where I didn't go in expecting a C-section. I had no plans. I had never even looked up what to do if you have a C-section. So I just didn't know how to even help myself. So I was very glad when someone finally just made some recommendations that had experience in it and was able to help me in that recovery, but it was long and it was hard. So that is my first one and how everything went. Again, pretty peaceful, but the recovery was the tough part that made me want to really change how it looked in the future.
I want to take a quick pause in our episode today to talk a little bit more about Needed Academy. As you know, preparing for a VBAC takes a lot of learning, research, and dedication. Our nutrition and overall health is so important and a detail that sometimes gets overlooked. Needed is making it easy for you to get an amazing information really at the tip of your fingertips. This free educational program is on Instagram, and it is for birth workers, practitioners, and the curious mom and mothers to be. Sharing this amazing resource with anyone you know who wants to understand how they can take care of themselves or others before, during, and after pregnancy. You will learn from leading health experts on topics like the physical demands of fertility, pregnancy, postpartum, and what our bodies need nutritionally to thrive. Remember, we have learned that 95% of pregnant women are nutritionally depleted. You're also going to learn things like why women need radically more nutritional support than the status quo delivers, the science and clinical experience behind Needed products, and more. I have personally been taking Needed products, and I really can't say it enough. They are mine and our team's favorite for so many reasons. I am so excited that Needed has done so much work to help us with solid supplements, and now they're offering this amazing free academy. You guys, if you can, do me a favor. Not if you're driving, but do me a favor if you're not. Stop the show right now and just press pause and click the link in the show notes for the academy. Get started today. It is honestly so easy. You can fill up the form on the link in the show notes and then head over to @NeededAcademy on Instagram to start learning. Don't forget that Needed is also offering our community 20% off with code VBACK. So also go to checkout once you're done with this episode today at thisisneeded.com to find prenatal vitamins, hydration support, sleep support, and more. Again, you can go to thisisneeded.com and get 20% off your order with code VBACK, and that is VBAC. Okay, let's get back into today's show. Let's take a moment to talk about Coterie wipes because they're just as amazing as their diapers. These wipes are made from 100% plant-based fibers and are up to 30% larger than most other brands, making them perfect for even the messiest of situations. They're also hypoallergenic and dermatologist tested, so they're safe for newborns and even eczema-prone skin. One of our team members shared that these wipes have been a game changer, gentle enough for delicate skin, but durable enough to get the job done with fewer wipes. They've even earned the National Eczema Association's Seal of Acceptance. You guys, you can pair these with Coterie diapers for a high-performance diaper duo. And do not forget, you can get 20% off with code VBACK20 of your first order of $40 or more. Add a pack of these incredible wipes to your order to see the difference.
So then I was found out I was pregnant with my second about a year later. So they're all 19 months apart. And I found out I was pregnant with my second, and I had already started my research on VBACs. Immediately, I started, like when I went home after my first, I started looking up failure to progress and just finding little things that I could continue to research and look up. And when I went into my 6-week follow-up appointment, I had asked him about a VBAC and if that was a potential for me. And immediately he starts doing the VBAC calculator,
Yes,
which,
typical.
yes, very typical. And he gave me a 25% chance. I said 1 in 5 chance that you'll be able to VBAC. So he's like, your odds aren't very good. So your next baby, we'll just schedule you for a C-section. And I left there just knowing that was not okay and not going to be my story in the future. So I started just researching everything I could. I was going to take it into my own hands as far as what my actual chances were and what I could do. And I just knew my intuition, like this didn't need to happen and didn't need to happen again. And so that's when I found the VBAC link. I found other resources like evidence-based birth, and I just dove all in for a whole year. I was all in because I knew I wanted to grow my family, but not with that outcome for me, and that it just wasn't necessary for me. And so when I found out I was pregnant my second, I had already researched all the OBs in the area that were VBAC friendly and that would help me. I researched doulas that were trained in VBACs and found my birth team before I was even pregnant. And it was great. I mean, they were supportive, they were understanding and agreeable that that didn't need to be my story the first time and definitely didn't need to be my second either. So I was really happy with that. And then we get through the pregnancy again, everything was looking great, uncomplicated. I passed my glucose test at 28 weeks and I went in for my growth scan at, I forget, 32 or 36 weeks.
Your
One of
growth scan. Well, It depends on the provider because a third trimester growth scan isn't really necessary, right?
Right.
But a lot of people do.
Yes.
And it does usually range around 32, 36 weeks.
Yep. It was somewhere right in there. I think maybe it was like 34 weeks for my second one. But everything looked good except for one part where they said, oh, the abdomen's looking a little big. And so I didn't know what that meant. I was like, what does that mean? And so I finally got in with my OB and she talked me through it and said, I think you might have some late onset gestational diabetes, even though you passed your glucose test, start taking your blood sugar. And so we went through that, and sure enough, my fasting numbers were off. The rest of the numbers looked pretty good and could all be diet controlled, but my fasting was off and high. And so they put me as gestational diabetes, and that's when things started to change tune a little bit. And we had talked the whole time leading up to this about how I did not want to be induced with this one, that I wanted, like, for me, that was my biggest mental hurdle for my next delivery was not to be induced, to know and like be confident my body could do it. And so when this came up, she said, this means that babies typically grow bigger, grow quicker. There's possible shoulder dystocia issues. There's all, she went through all the risks of if your baby doesn't come by before your 30 or your 40 weeks, there's increased risks in it. And so week by week, we took it until we got to like 37 weeks, 38 weeks, and she just starts then really pushing for induction. And I felt so relieved that I felt confident in my education and through this podcast and all of, listening to other people's stories that I could say, I think there's some other things that we could do to, work through it before we skip to induction. And I was open to any, anything that she requested. She really wanted a safe delivery and labor, which we all did, but also it meant for me too, making sure that my, like, I was protected in my space and what I wanted from it. And so I agreed to doing non-stress tests. I agreed to growth scans. I agreed to coming in basically 3 times a week for checkup to make sure that baby was still good and monitoring well, just to not be induced. And so we did that. And then she said, by 40 weeks is probably where I'm gonna say we've got to cut it off because of the baby's growth. So I got to 39 and 6 days, and I woke up at 2:30 in the morning. My water broke, and I was so relieved, so relieved, because I knew the next day I was going in for that appointment with her first thing in the morning, and she was going to tell me I'd have to go in for an induction. And I mentally was not prepared to, again, like, have to push back, against her, because she had at this point been pushing pretty hard. And so my water broke at 2:30, and I wanted to make sure it was, because it was just like a small trickle more so. So I, put on a pad and made sure and walked around. I was like, yep, this is definitely like my amniotic fluid. And so I started having some bloody show, but no contractions had started. And that was concerning for me.
Prom.
Yep. So I just tried to, like, kind of move around, quietly throughout my house, getting things ready, keeping on my feet, kind of going up and down the stairs whenever I needed to grab something and forgot something, hoping that contractions start. And around, I text my doula at 4 a.m. and let her know that my water had broke, but still hadn't started contractions. So she just said, stay at home, hang out, do your thing. And then I didn't even contact my OB until 7 a.m. And at that point, she was like, you need to come in right away. We need to start monitoring. We need to get you hooked up, all the things. And I said, okay, well, I'll drop my toddler off at grandparents' house and I'll be there, when I get there. And then we kind of took our time that morning and getting in. And I was in no rush because I wanted to labor at home as long as possible, but labor also wasn't really kicking in. And at that point, because my OB was aware of the situation, she kept kind of having her office call and check in and make sure I was making it to the hospital. And so we stopped and got some breakfast and then walked around the hospital parking lot for a while, curb walking and trying to get things moving. And at 10:45, I finally arrived into triage. And sure enough, they checked. It was the amniotic fluid. I was in labor. My contractions were about minutes apart, but not very hard at that time. So it was pretty light. And then they got me into a room and hooked me up, and they said they were going to start me on some Pitocin to help move it along. And that was okay with me. I didn't feel like I really had much of a choice there, but I did know a bunch of things I wanted to ask about as far as what they had available in the hospital for laboring. So I wanted to ask if I could move around, if I could walk around the unit, can I have a exercise ball, all the things. And the nurse was not super thrilled. It was not a VBAC friendly hospital, and I knew that going in, which is why it was so important to have such a great team behind me, supportive team, because I knew I'd be up against a lot of the hospital policies. But I thought I had more available to me than, while talking to my OB than what was actually available to me. So when they started me in Pitocin, my contractions came on pretty strong almost immediately. I laid over the bed. I didn't want to lay down, so I just like put my rest of my head on the bed and stood and kind of swayed and rocked a little bit. And she came in and said, "Mama, you're laboring like a home birth. Why don't you get and lay down and get to bed and get some rest?" And that really disturbed me in my space. I couldn't understand why she was telling me that, other than she really wanted me to get into bed. So every time after that, when I wasn't laying in bed, she kept coming to the room saying, "Why don't you lay down and get some bed, like get some rest? We can get you an epidural, you can relax." And she just kept pushing and pushing. And finally, I just had to ask her to stop asking and that I'll let her know when I was ready for an epidural and wanted to get some rest. And then fast forward, my OB comes in around noon. At this point, my water had burst and I was leaking everywhere and pretty like hard contractions. My OB comes in and tells me that she's not able to make the birth because she has surgeries the next day, and so she'll have to get her partner in. And my doula, which I knew this was the possibility, but my doula was not able to show up because she's gonna be out of town for less than 48 hours. And we knew it was over the due date, but your chance of being born on your due date is like less than
Pretty
5%.
low. Yeah.
So we felt pretty confident that she would be there for the birth. So
Did she have backup?
she had called a backup, but her backup was in a labor of her own. So I had a backup to a backup that I hadn't met, and that was also coming from over an hour away. And so my whole team, everything I had planned for, just totally got changed. And so when my OB told me that she wasn't going to be there, I just kind of like broke down for a second of just what am I going to do? I have a nurse that doesn't support me. I have OB that won't be here that knows me and my wishes. And now my doula that I've never met and don't know when she's going to show up. And I have no real like great contact with her. It was hard, but we kept at it. And then I just labored all day. Then after that, my doula showed up. She really helped with like a lot of the back compressions and helping with that. I felt a lot in my back at that time. So she was huge, huge help in doing all of those. And then we finally got to a point where I had labored for, I believe, 18 hours, pretty hard. And I was finally had reached a five, I think it was 5 centimeters dilated. And at that point, everyone kind of agreed in the room that maybe we should try the epidural and get my body to relax a little bit. And I just remember looking at the doula just saying, "I want to make sure I'm in full active labor on my own before I agree to just laying down again and doing that." And she just looked and she was like, "I think it might help you at this point to really relax." And so by the time I ended up getting the epidural, I was already 6 centimeters. And I went from 6 to 10. I got the epidural and I went from 6 to 10 pretty quickly. So
That's
I
so
was
awesome.
happy with that, but very apprehensive of the epidural again. But I just have long labors. And so then, I laid, they let me rest a little bit longer. They had me sit up so that he could get into better dilation station or drop his dilation.
His
And
station, his drop, his station getting lower in the
yeah.
pelvis.
So they had me sit up, and then around 2 a.m., the OB comes in and we start doing pushing. I pushed for about an hour, just a little over an hour, and he was born, and it was the most redemptive birth ever. My husband actually caught him and it was so wonderful and so
Yeah.
fun for all of us. Even the OB, that was just so sweet. And just like, she even told me, like, even though your water broke within 12 hours, like over 12 hours ago, we're going to have you keep going. And she was just so supportive
Good.
in saying, you know, as long as you don't have an infection, you're good to go. Like, just keep going. And so I was very happy with how that whole thing turned out and getting
Yeah.
that feedback. It just felt so powerful and like I could finally advocate for myself with like all the education that I had
Good.
about
Yeah.
education.
And I mean, that could have been a moment where you just were so derailed and weren't able to get back on track when everybody's like, you're like, this is my team. I've built this team. And everyone's like, falling. And then my water broke, which was really exciting. But then at the same time, they're like wanting to induce the labor. And there's like so many things that could have just derailed you. And you were able to really stay on and stay focused and accept that things and plans were changing. But I always say this, it's kind of interesting, but I truly believe it. It always works out how it's supposed to be within the doula world. Like sometimes we have weird things happen and then the other person's gone, or you have someone that you never met and it's pretty rare, but when it happens, it can be intimidating. And she was really great. And then this OB coming in, it was just so great. So great to hear that it worked out so smoothly.
Yeah, I said after that, that was like the perfect team for me in the end, but one I hadn't picked myself, but it was, they were all wonderful and it was just such a great experience and a great birth.
Yeah. So with baby number three, did you stick with the same people?
So I did, yes, and you know, you always feel a little bad kind of switching doulas after just
Yeah.
because one didn't show up, but they were
Yeah.
both so supportive of it and understood all the reasons why. And it was just a great team. I wasn't able to switch to that OB because they were in the same office and they just have a policy that you can't switch within the office. So,
Really?
yeah,
I don't like
she's
that.
very busy. So she doesn't take on new patients even as it is. And they
Okay.
just keep to that policy. And I tried and tried, but it didn't work. But I still wasn't unsatisfied with my first, you know, it was what it was. So we did stick with that. And again, there's not a lot of VBAC friendly around me. So, and certainly definitely not in the hospitals. So I just knew I kind of was like, well, if she's not there again, at least I know I'm getting more
Right.
support. I'm not relying on just the one.
Yeah.
So,
Yeah.
yeah, so I did stick with it. But yeah, that one was interesting in that I went in and had again passed my glucose test. Everything was looking great for that one up until my growth scan, when again he started measuring big in the abdomen and they said it was late onset gestational diabetes again, start taking my blood sugars, and it was the same exact thing. The fasting number got me every time. So
Interesting.
I diet controlled. I did all the things, but this time I also knew there's more risks at hand just because it was a second time. And, you know, my first, he didn't get stuck or anything like that, but they definitely said it was a pretty, you know, tight squeeze. They, you know, the nurse told me after, she's like, you're pretty small. And he was pretty big. Like it was almost an issue, but they were still very supportive about it. And so this time I just knew like, okay, I have to have a different plan this time
Yeah.
around. And so
How big was he?
he was 8'5".
Oh,
Yeah, so
that's not that big.
not that big, no.
Yeah.
But I felt confident. I was like, he wasn't that big, but this
Yeah.
one was also feeling bigger to me. And I could just, it just felt different carrying this one. And so I was really concerned that induction was going to be the only way. And I really was struggling to make that choice. Do I get induced? And if I agree to induction, like, is it before 39 weeks or can I wait to 39 weeks or what does that look like? Can I push to 40? I was like, I don't think I can push her to 40 this time around because it was such a big deal the last time. And so I was just, you know, from 36 weeks on when I found out that it was late onset gestational diabetes, I was just every day consuming anything I could about gestational diabetes, which I didn't find a lot, to be honest. Not as many stories and shared experiences as I had hoped. And just, I couldn't find a lot of good concrete evidence for induction and like what to do in this case, especially when I was being controlled, but still show like couldn't get my fasting number quite right.
Right.
And so she had said, I think at 39 weeks, we need to do an induction. And so I had prepared, I'd done all the things I could to try to get this baby out, curb walking, mile circuit, anything I could. 39 weeks, I woke up on the day and started having contractions at 7 a.m. And
Oh,
I was so, again, so relieved that my body just knew when it was time. And probably also just the pressure of knowing I was about to go have the induction conversation and start that way. They were just like contractions, nothing big. I got up, got ready for the day, like went with the family, did all the things. And anytime like I was alone in the room, my contractions would be really hard and come on really strong. And then whenever like family was around, my husband would walk in or something like that, it would kind of stop and stall. And so all day this happened where I was just like having really, really hard, strong contractions and then nothing and for hours because I was with my kids or with, somebody else. And then by the evening, because they were just throughout the day, he was like, I think we should leave the kids at, who's gonna be taking care of them. And so I'll go, put them to bed and drop them off. And this was about like 6 p.m. And when he was gone, it was like immediate. My contractions came on so hard, so strong for that hour he was gone. He was watching the contraction timer and it was like every 2, 3 minutes, really strong, hard contractions. And so we called the doula. She showed up about 8 to our house and she kind of just let me, she was like, why don't you go sit, on the toilet for a dilation station? And I couldn't even get myself to sit. I was so contracting so hard, but my water hadn't broken or anything. So I was really concerned that maybe it wasn't true active labor just because I had never labored at home before and didn't know what it felt like to be on my own. And I was talking and laughing in between the contractions. So I was like, it's not that bad. It's not that hard. And then she was like, I was like, I just want to be further than a 4. And she goes, I think you're further than a 4. So she said, you can go, go in whenever you want. You can stay a little bit longer or you can go in. So we finally agreed to go in. I got to the hospital and contractions were really strong in the car driving over, and I had to lean over the seat backwards to get through them. And then when I showed up to the hospital, it was like everything, I don't want to say stopped, but like stalled. And I was very fine. I could talk. I got in no problem, walked myself in. They were looking at me like, yeah, you're probably only a 3 or 4, early labor. So they took me back to triage and I was 8 centimeters dilated and couldn't believe it. So I was like so excited that I had gotten so far on my own in such a short period of time. And it felt so easy, like for me. The contractions were never at a point where I was felt like I was truly struggling.
Unmanageable.
Yeah. And so they got me back to the room. And at that point, they were like, do you want an epidural? Do you not? And I was just like, well, I mean, I'm 8 centimeters dilated. And sure, like I hadn't really prepared to not have an epidural just because of how my other ones went. So I wasn't mentally like ready for that next transition. So I agreed to an epidural and then it stopped. Everything stopped. And now, hindsight 2020, I wish I hadn't got the epidural because they said if they had broke my water, I probably would have deliver that baby right away.
Really quick.
Yeah, they were like, your waters are bulging, like we can just break your waters and have this baby. But yeah, I didn't, it would have be an on-call doctor. I knew I had gestational diabetes, that it was big. My doctor had already really kind of weighed heavily on the possibility of shoulder dystocia, which I wasn't thrilled about because I felt like it kind of brought in like that is what's going to happen. And so, but I had done a lot of research, what I could on it, and still not finding a ton. So, anyways, fast forward, had that like waited with a little bit of Pitocin to help kick back the contractions and the epidural. And around 6 a.m., I finally got to a 10. I did have a cervical lip. And so, when the doctor came in, she said, are you comfortable if we remove that or do you want to wait a little bit longer? And I said, let's remove it and we can start trying to push a little bit. So, we did. And as I was pushing, it was definitely a lot harder this time around. It felt a lot more in my back and everything like that. And then all of a sudden they said, okay, we see his head. And they had me push, and then his head came out, and that was it. And he totally got stuck. And so all of the alarms went off, and she called for all the help. I had a team rush in and try to pull this baby out, and he was stuck for over 2 minutes. It was about 2.5 minutes. So his time of birth actually changed from when his head popped, and then they had to readjust it to his time when his full body came out. It was pretty alarming, I would say, to have everyone in there and kind of pushing and pulling and doing all those things. It was pretty painful, a lot of bruising that took place, but we were finally able to get him out, and everyone was happy and healthy at that point. He was 8'12", so again, not terribly big, but bigger than the rest. And so, just moving forward, don't know what that looks like or what that means, especially with the gestational diabetes, but at least we know to what to look like ahead of time, kind of what to prepare for. So
Yeah, well, and there's a lot of things with shoulder dystocia that can be fixed, right? Like position. Did they try and get you in a different position, even with an epidural? Like,
They, yeah, not really. It was just kind of laying on your back. Yeah.
yeah. So,
Yep.
like flipping over to your side or even really hands and knees, right? Like
Yep.
that can fix a shoulder dystocia really, really quickly without the trauma to the mom and the baby. And yeah, I mean, there are things, but like, I'm glad that you were able to get him out and he was okay.
Yeah, he was
No
fine. No
breakage
breaks.
of the shoulder. Okay,
Nope,
good.
no breaks or anything. My doula did say the OB was very skilled in her maneuvering, and she did some different
Good.
maneuvers that my doula hadn't previously seen.
Well, good.
So that was good. And my OB kind of talked me through that and how she had read some things years back and remembered it for
Good.
probably this. She was like, probably for this scenario. And so
Yeah.
it was successful, and I'm very thankful for that.
Good. I'm so happy. Would you still do it? Would you still have had
100%.
vaginal birth?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
I always wonder because that is it's a lot. They're pushing
Yeah.
on your belly, they're standing over you, there's a lot of panic.
Yeah.
And yeah,
It
sometimes
is a
you're laying
lot.
there.
But I just felt like with my recovery and how hard it was, my first one, anything was better. So even for my two VBACs, I tore them both. My second VBAC, I tore pretty significantly, third degree in every way. And my second VBAC, I tore again with a second degree, so lesser. So I was used to kind of having,
Some tearing down there.
not completely unscathed deliveries, but anything honestly was better than that C-section recovery for me. And I know that's so personal for everyone and different for everyone and every time you do it. But yeah, I definitely felt better with my vaginal deliveries and the success that they were.
Good. Well, I also want to add into the show notes giving birth vaginally to a larger baby. Like, there are some tips, right, on that. And then I also want to add our gestational diabetes blog in there. And I just want to throw a little shout out to Lily Nichols. Have you ever heard of Lily Nichols?
Yes, I found her right away when I
Okay,
first got
yes.
diagnosed.
So I want to tell people, like, definitely check out if you've had gestational diabetes before, or if you are thinking gestational diabetes could be a thing. Honestly, I just think it's really a good book no matter what. There's Real Food for Pregnancy by Lily Nichols, and then there's The Real Food for Gestational Diabetes by Lily Nichols. They're books. She's amazing. You can also go back in. We'll put it in the show notes as well for her episode. We had her on the podcast and she talked about this. So definitely something to check out for sure. And listen, I want to kind of point out that sometimes you can do all the things right. You can eat perfectly. You can exercise perfectly and still gestational diabetes comes up. You test negative for gestational diabetes and then it happens. It's late onset, right? So I don't know exactly what you can do for a late onset. Like maybe there's something before to make it not happen, but either way, you're doing all the things, and sometimes it still happens. And that just comes sometimes with birth. Sometimes it's unplanned, or there's not an answer. Unanswered. Like, I don't know the right word. Like, There's just no description of why. And it can be really frustrating, but you do everything you can do within the time and what you are, the hand that you're being dealt. And in the end, hopefully have an amazing experience.
And both were. And yeah, it was definitely stressful to feel like my plans were changing, but I also felt very in control of what I could advocate for. And so that was a
Good.
huge help.
Awesome. Well, do you have any other tips or anything for our listeners when it comes to preparing for a VBAC or maybe having gestational diabetes?
I think just educating yourself, I know that's what kind of everyone says, but my
It's
first, I just
simple,
went
isn't it?
in. Yeah, it's a simple answer. I just didn't know what my options were or that there were other options than what were being told to me. And so being able to, say this is, I knew that if I was going to get an induction, I wanted a Foley bowl if I could. I knew if I want, I had different plans in place and different knowledge of what those things could be and look like. And that was game changer every step of the way.
Oh, thank you for sharing those words and thank you for sharing your stories and huge congrats to you on all of them.
Thank you. Thank you for having me on. It was great to be here today and to share these experiences because I know for me it's such a big help to have the shared experiences from others. So thank you.
It really is hearing other people's stories, and even though it might not be every story might not be exactly like yours, it's so healing to hear that other people do have other situations and still come out having a vaginal birth. Or you may have people where you're like, oh my gosh, that was just like me. And you feel so connected. And then that episode's on repeat, but that episode's on repeat with you knowing and telling yourself, I can do this. This is possible. And yeah, I love it. You kind of mentioned the shoulder dystocia, like mentioning it, and you're like, it felt like it was kind of like projected. Maybe I'll use that word. Like, and I really want to encourage people to start thinking about where you are mentally and start bringing those positive affirmations in. Like in a situation like yours, like, okay, and if that happens, we will get through it. We will get through it. We will get through it, right? Just over and over. Because bringing those positivity or those positivity, those positive affirmation and having more positivity, I swear it does something to us.
Absolutely. Mindset was everything. Visualization in both of my VBACs pregnancies were huge for me. So I've really spent a lot of time just planning and like thinking positive and kind of protecting that birth space.
Oh, well, thank you again.
Yeah, thank you. Appreciate it.
Would you like to be a guest on the podcast? Head over to thevbacklink.com/share to submit your story. For information on all things VBAC, including online and in-person VBAC classes, the VBAC blog, the worldwide database for VBAC doulas, and more, head over to thevbacklink.com. Congratulations on starting your journey of learning and discovery with the VBAC Link.
Hey, everybody, I just wanted to take a quick sec to thank you all so much for listening to today's episode. We are so glad that you are here. This community is near and dear to our heart. We love you all so much. If you enjoyed today's episode, we would really appreciate it if you'd leave us a rating and review. Our whole team here at the VBAC Link actually gets to see these reviews come in, and it makes our day. A 5-star rating helps us share our podcast and gets these important messages out there. Thank you so much for listening, and we cannot wait to see you next time.